Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You're listening to Total EM. I have Fred back with me again for round two of talking about the interview, negotiations, contracts, all that good stuff. The stuff that's going to help you whether you're a new grad or someone who's been around the block for a little bit. But before we get too far, Fred, can you give us just a quick reintroduction of who you are?
Sure. Hi, guys. Fred Wu. I'm a full-time emergency medicine PA for the past 13 years. I'm currently a residency program director at UCSF Fresno for a PA residency. I'm also the president-elect of SEMPA, the Society of Emergency Medicine PAs. I chair the education committee and also serve on the postgraduate education committee as well.
Fred, we talked about last time things like how you pick out a job and the questions that you ask, the CV you get, how to go through the interview process, all that kind of stuff. So let's say you, the employer, everyone's all happy. They want to have you on board and you want to go there. This is a place that you thought you matched pretty well with. Everything's jiving. Let's see what happens. So they said, well, we're going to send you a contract. What are some of the things that we need to consider when we're looking at a contract?
Yeah, so that's a key part, Chip, is looking at the contract you get. And sometimes these things are a complete pain because I don't know about you, Chip, but sometimes I feel like they're not even written in English. There's so much legal jargon and you're confused and thinking, what the heck? And you're having to look up every other word to see what it means. So I think the first thing I would say is that if you feel like you need the help, it's definitely not a bad thing to get a contract review by a lawyer. It may cost you, $500, $1,000, who knows? But that may actually be money well worth it in the end if anything ever goes wrong with your contract and you can get a professional opinion about all the various nuances within that contract. That's the first thing I would say.
As a student, it's hard to come up with that kind of cash, especially if you just spent the last few years in school. I understand Fred's throwing out some big numbers. Keep in mind there are other places to go cheaper. Depending on your professional society, if you already belong to one, some of these have built-in people who do review. They may not necessarily be an attorney, but they are going to be someone who can review that. A cheap route, not saying to necessarily do this by itself. If you have legitimate legal questions, an attorney is very valuable and is someone you should still consider. But let's say you just want to get some things clarified, or maybe you understand it, but you're not sure if it's fair, and I'm saying fair in quotation marks because you may not know, is this something that's appropriate for this role? Whatever the case may be, if you have some more basic questions that are not specifically needing the understanding of an attorney, feel free to reach out to maybe a preceptor or a couple of preceptors or your professors or someone. Just find people you trust who you feel like can also review the contract. That's a huge part. And most of these contracts will maybe have certain language that may almost sound like you have to be careful about who you show it to, which is fair. But just keep in mind, a lot of times it's referring to competition purposes and stuff like that. So don't freak out just because it says, well, you're not supposed to share the pay information or stuff like that. There's usually ways around that.
And you actually led into another great topic, Chip, was the competitors. And are there any clauses in your contract about working for the competition or a non-compete clause? So you want to be really aware of these contracts if they have any type of a restrictive covenant that says that, hey, you know what? If, for example, if you're fired or if you're let go, you cannot work within a certain mile radius of where we are. You cannot work for a competitor group, things like that, which could really put you in a bind if for some reason, if you're let go and if there aren't very many options in town where you live, it could force you to move possibly because they might hold that to you. So definitely look closely. Are there any restrictions to your contract? Something that's also seen in contracts is, are there any limitations on outside activities? Sometimes you find these in academics where they don't want you working elsewhere, or if you work elsewhere, they might actually tax what you make if you're working somewhere per diem. So keep that in mind also. Sometimes if you sign on to a facility and there's a sign-on bonus, you want to make sure, great, what's the term of my bonus? What happens if I break it? Do I have to pay any interest? Things like that. It's the devil's in the details. So you definitely got to know, what's in that contract so that you don't end up regretting it down the road if anything ever goes wrong.
Keep in mind, contracts are negotiable. This is so important. Contracts are negotiable. Just repeat that for a second. Contracts are negotiable. So when you see something you don't like, maybe it doesn't seem fair, maybe it's something that you're just calling bullshit on or whatever the case may be, if there's something you don't like in there, work with that employer, work with that person who's offering that contract, and see if there is something you can work out. For example, that non-compete. First try and say, hey, I don't like this non-compete thing. Like, let's face it, I'm in a town of a couple of hundred people. Like, the next town of a couple of hundred people that I can even work at is 100 miles away. Your non-compete is for 150 miles. I'm throwing out huge numbers here, but this is just an example. Well, I can't even work in the next town over. I can't do that. Let's say I won't work within a 25-mile radius, or better yet, let's say I don't have to worry about it at all. Those types of things, you got to figure out what's fair. And in some cases, in some states, they may even have stipulations in the law. This is, again, a good time to get a lawyer involved about it may not actually technically be legal for them to put such an arduous thing on there to basically limit so you have to travel outside or have to move so far away that it's no longer feasible for what you need to do. So just keep in mind that contracts are negotiable and there are ways around that.
Yeah, that's a great point, Chip. And I think there's really never ever harm in asking. You know, I mean, the worst thing they're going to say is no, and you're back to where you started. But if there's something that you find that, can you decrease the radius of that non-compete, or can you take it out entirely? I think it's always worth asking about.
Something else to keep in mind while we're just talking about the actual wording of contracts and things like that. One of my favorite things, I think I can attribute this to my dad again, is where I've heard this from. Both my parents are lawyers, by the way, so I just there are so many jokes there. A lot of them I really like. A lot of them they don't like for some reason.
You should have them on next, actually.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Then it'd be too long of a podcast and no one would listen to it. My parents do listen to my podcast. I love them very much. Thanks, Mom and Dad. But really, when it comes down to contracts, something that my dad says, and I think is very important because he is a contracts attorney, and I had him look over my stuff. Now, given he doesn't know some of the industry standards and things like that, but something that is just traditional in contracts and something to keep in mind. Let's say someone tells you, hey, we know you want ultrasound at your site. We don't have ultrasound right now. I tell you what, you sign up with us, we'll get you a brand new ultrasound machine. Your pick, you get whatever else you need. We need whatever is going to take to get you here. And you're like, okay, cool, sounds great. Sign the dotted line. Problem is with stuff like that is, this is where my dad's quote comes in. Verbal contracts are only as good as the paper it's written on. But really, be very, very cautious about what are people saying, what are they promising you, and get them to put that on paper. Because verbal contracts are very hard to back up. There are ways to do it in the legal system and stuff like that. But let's face it, you don't really want to get in a lawsuit to try and figure something out like this. And most of the time, it's just not going to work out. Feasibly, financially, it's not worth it. A good, solid contract from the beginning is going to save you. One of the easiest ways to do that is anything they promised you, get them to write it down. And same thing for them. If you're going to promise them something, make sure that it's all written in there, because anything that's not on there, it's hearsay in the end. It's very hard to prove something that's in a verbal contract.
And such a good point, because really these written contracts are for when things go wrong, so that it's there. Both sides have the proof in writing of what was guaranteed to the other side. You know, if you have a verbal contract and things go wrong, that's already a problem there by itself, where, like you said, it turns into he said, she said. So it's really to protect both sides from when things go wrong that there's written proof that this is what's supposed to be done.
And like I said, some places, they're so desperate for people in a good way. A lot of times they're so desperate for people, they're going to make accommodations for you. But a lot of times they may not specify, and they may say, well, this is just a standard. Okay, well, then let's just add this as an addendum, or write a letter to me or some sort of email. Make sure there's some sort of paper trail to go with it. Even if it's not going to be in the main contract, make sure there's some way that there's something to back it up. Because they may say, well, we don't want to put in the contract that you're going to get an ultrasound machine. That doesn't make sense. But why don't I write a letter that goes with your contract that says, part of the terms of you being hired is this, and we'll refer to it as the letter or whatever in the actual contract itself. There were so many different ways to do this that you can make it legally sound.
And it protects both sides. So,
all right. So we talked about kind of the wording in there, but something that I know everyone is waiting for, because it's something that I always thought about, especially as a student. What's fair pay? How do we figure out what is fair pay, especially in emergency medicine? And I feel like before we can answer the dollar signs amount, let's talk about the different types of work settings, because we talked about this a little bit last time. There are going to be full-time employee or part-time employee positions, so an actual employee versus an independent contractor, versus technically there's a difference between independent contractor and locum tenens, because locums can be, you know, an employee, you can be an employer of that group, or you actually are going to be an independent contractor for that group. So keep in mind, locums doesn't always necessarily mean independent contractor, but let's talk about that a little bit, Fred.
So I think there's, like you mentioned, different categories of full-time, part-time, per diem. A lot of times the full-time folks, you know, you're guaranteed, you know, so many hours, full-time hours, along with the full benefits. Part-time folks, that goes down, obviously, you're guaranteed a certain number of hours, obviously decreased from the full-time hours. And some places will actually offer you limited benefits. And the per diem folks, pretty much, as many people know, it's just kind of work whenever you can, what's available. If there is anything available, then that's that. There's no benefits involved. Per diem positions typically will pay higher just because it's a non-benefited position and there's no guaranteed hours. So just kind of keep that in mind. And then also when you're looking at a job, are you going to be an hourly employee versus a salary employee? And just to make sure, you might need to do some math just to make sure that what you're getting paid is reasonable. And what you brought up initially was, what's the market price? What am I being paid fairly for what the work I'm doing? And I think there's probably a few ways to look into that. You know, one way would be if you had contacts in the area, obviously try to find out what's the going rate for an emergency medicine PA in the area. That's one way of doing it. Several groups out there do offer salary data. For example, I know the AAPA does, the NCCPA does. That might be another way to get a ballpark idea. I think some of the journals out there, I believe Advance used to do a survey. I think they might still do one, but just check into that, where that can get you some data. So I think those are some, you know, initial ways of figuring out, great, am I in the right ballpark or are they just lowballing me?
Now, we talked about the hourly versus salary, and you briefly mentioned this, so I just want to build off of this for a second. Make sure if you're looking at a salary position, because this happens all the time, salary positions, they sound really good. They give you a good big number all the way up until you actually start breaking down the number of hours they're going to require you to work. And the next thing you know, you're working for $10, $15, $20 or more dollars less an hour than you would if you're an hourly employee. And this can be really disadvantageous, because especially if you're working as a salary employee and you don't get extra hours for more hours that you work, because some places will do that, well, now you got yourself totally screwed out of making any extra money. They're just going to make a whole lot more money off of you. So be very careful about that when you're looking at a position. The other thing that I'd like to throw in there, there are all sorts of PA sites for pay and stuff like that. If you are a PA that's getting compensated really well, especially, please, 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 for the sake of all of us, throw that out there. Fill out every survey you can, because every time that helps, that boosts us up just a tad bit more. And don't make up numbers. Make sure you're really putting forth the effort if you're getting paid well, because that's what the rest of us use to negotiate off of. It's been amazing how much our salaries have grown in Missouri over the last few years. And I think part of that is because we try and encourage people who are making good pay to make sure they are answering those surveys. And it does help out. I've noticed significant improvement over our pay over the last few years.
Yeah, that's an absolutely great point of getting a true, accurate sense of what we should be making is definitely put down those true, accurate numbers.
So when we talk about looking at positions, we've talked already so much about looking at kind of the wording, seeing if you need a lawyer or other people to look over it. We've also talked about a little bit about numbers. I get asked this all the time. And obviously, you in California, kind of a little more an urban environment versus me, rural Missouri, the pay is going to be different. And one of the things is I get people who, they live up in St. Louis, because that's going to be the closest big city for me. So they live up in St. Louis. They live in the city. And they say, well, I can make just as much as you do, or close to just as much as you do out in your rural setting. Why should I work in a rural setting? The big thing, like cost of living, that's a huge difference. Think about cost of living. Think about taxes. Think about the way you can make your pay work. So if you're an independent contractor versus a full-time employee, if you've got a spouse with excellent benefits, do you really need to have your own set of benefits? Some people will say yes, maybe you should, just as a precaution or stuff like that. But for me, like, my spouse has pretty decent benefits. So I'm an independent contractor and I get some nice things off of it. And I have, you know, my way of my business set up. I make it so I make good money off of it. It's fair pay for what I do. But if my wife did not have her benefits, I probably wouldn't take the position I do, because again, I would not have the benefits to back it up. So just keep in mind, you need to factor in things like that and the cost of living. Sure, I can make a few bucks more maybe working up in the city and stuff, but if I have to double my cost of living expenses, it's not worth it. So just think about those types of things when you're looking at a position and figuring out what your pay is. If you can negotiate a pretty good pay in an outlying setting where you can live further out of town, but still have all the things that you need to make your life happy, if you don't have the yoga studio you want, I guess you are going to be screwed. But if you're like me and there's certain things I need, mainly fast internet because of what I do, as long as I can get decent internet, I'm pretty happy for the most part and I can make everything else work from there. So figure out what you need to live in your area and then figure out the cost of living. And is that cost of living going to be fair for what you're getting paid?
And a couple things just to tag onto what you just said, which I totally agree with, is that whenever you consider going to that independent contractor status, it might be worth the money to consult with an accountant, because everyone's financial situation is different. And for some folks, the move to that independent contractor status might be the best move. But for some folks who don't have a complex financial picture, it may not be worth it to do that route, because those independent contractors, remember, do have to pay their own payroll taxes.
Yes, you do. And get an accountant and get it to be your friend. I have a personal accountant that we work with for all my business stuff. I also have a personal financial advisor, which realistically, if you're working in medicine and you're kind of making the money that we do, it's not a bad idea to have a financial advisor. Plan ahead, figure out, do you have enough disability? Do you have enough life insurance? All that kind of stuff. Make sure you have all your affairs sorted in a sense, so that way you can get this done and you're saving money for the long term and stuff like that. Especially as an independent contractor, it's that much more important for me to get all that lined up and making sure that my business is covering that and we get everything fair pay and we're doing everything right according to the law. So very important that you follow that and that you have some people who are much smarter than you are at doing stuff like that. I guess if you're own, you know, you're a CPA before and you were a financial advisor, maybe you don't need those people, but most of us aren't, and we need that kind of help.
And to also add on to your comment about the pay in the rural versus the urban area, I think that's an excellent point, actually. You know, my only guess is that, you know, urban areas probably aren't going to pay as well as a rural area, just because that's what you pay for. You pay for living in a more desirable area of the state or the country. Again, to harp on some of the benefits of rural practice, cost of living is great and more remote if that's what you want. But these areas that are more rural, more remote, typically pay more because it's harder to recruit for those areas, one. And then two, I think I mentioned this before, is that these rural areas, you can typically have a better scope, a better practice environment in a rural setting. So just kind of keep that in mind.
Yeah, and those are all things that you need to look at in your contract too, is, you know, something else is kind of an extension of the contract is what's the collaboration agreement. And if you have a good collaborative agreement, that's going to be something important. If you get paid really well, but you're not going to get to do anything, is it really what you want to do? And I had that issue a lot with some of the places I was looking at working, was they paid really well and they had some great benefits to it, but it wasn't what I wanted to do. It's hard to enjoy what you are doing if you aren't getting to do what you want, even if you're getting paid really well for it. So keep in mind, it's very important still to factor that in. There are some positions that I've looked at other places where I know it'd be a pay cut, but it'd be very desirable for the other things I want to do in life. So just keep in mind that it's important to look at the big picture. It's not just about the pay. It's not just about the benefits. It's what is it going to do for you? What are they going to offer for you that it's going to make you a better PA and a better provider overall?
Right. Money, while it is very important, obviously, isn't the only factor and, you know, cannot buy happiness entirely. So excellent points, Chip.
All right. Well, I guess what else do we need to add on the contract side of things or negotiations in general?
Well, do you want to, how about we talk a little bit about like benefits and like the benefit packages? I think that's always kind of a big thing. And to start off, I tell folks, when you're looking at benefit packages and pay, you got to make sure you're comparing apples to apples, not apples to grapefruits or apples to watermelons. I think for new grads especially, money is always very exciting because you come out in such debt. So if job A is paying you $60 an hour and job B is paying you $90 an hour, well, why is that? I mean, are they truly identical jobs with identical benefits and one is just paying a lot more for whatever reason? Or is job B that's paying $90 an hour paying you so much because you don't have any benefits? You don't get PTO time or sick time or CME money or whatever. So I think it's really important to look at all those things to make an informed decision that you're actually making an accurate comparison. And when you're looking at all these jobs, there's so many things to look at. You know, do you get a CME allowance? It's important to look at, do you get paid time off? Do you get sick time? Are they separate banks of time or are they combined? Do you get retirement? You know, a lot of places will do 401ks and Roth IRAs and stuff like that. Do you get a match with that? I think that's super key. Health savings accounts, health coverage. Do you get your choice plans? Can you pick PPOs and HMOs and high deductibles and low deductibles? Do you get eye coverage, dental coverage? All those things definitely factor into your total compensation package. And I think that you definitely want to look at all those components because let's say job A, the one that paid $60 an hour, which was less, pays that much because they have a phenomenal compensation package where they have a phenomenal 401k match and phenomenal CME time and phenomenal pay time off, all those things. So I think it's always key to look at that. Also, looking at malpractice, are you covered for malpractice? What type of malpractice it is? What are your limits? Is it occurrence only? Is there a tail? Things to keep in mind for that. Is your pay based off of productivity? Haha, that's always key. Do you have to see so many patients per hour or bill so much to earn what you're billing, basically? Do you get bonuses? How often do you get bonuses? What are they based on? Those are all the things that I think about for the entire compensation package. And I can probably guarantee you that it's probably all over the place in the industry. I'm sure what I have is probably a little different than what versus somebody else in Washington versus somebody else, you know, in Florida. But that might just be what the region does or the group does. Person looking for a job can make that distinction and hopefully fill the right position for them.
A few things to cover with that because you hit it so well right off the bat. But when it comes to some of these benefits, one of the things to do is to calculate this out as best as you can on your own. Because going with your job A versus job B, maybe job A pays $60 an hour, but when you factor in all the benefits, if in a sense you figure out your salary roughly, especially if it was like hourly pay, but you figured out your salary and said, hey, this is more like $110 an hour. Now this sounds really good. But you may also do the math and say, the benefits sound great because they list all these benefits, but they're super high deductibles and they actually only pay for part of this or part of that. And once you all do all the math, it's more like a $75-$80 kind of compensation for it. Well, maybe that $90 job really is the better job. And I've run into situations like that too. I went through the compensation package and was like, it sounds great. They offer a lot, but it's really not the best. Or maybe it's a crappy insurance because I've dealt with that too. A few things that I think personally are standard, and the AAPA salary report especially does a very good job about this, and I think in SIMPAs it does a fairly good job too, is looking at what is in a sense standard or what should you expect. You know, what percentage of this type of employee will have this type of benefit? Almost universal, I think we can say, is malpractice is usually covered by the employer and should be, but make sure it has tail coverage with it. That's one of the biggest things I can tell, that you can literally walk away from this today and know that I need to make sure they have malpractice and I need to make sure that they have tail coverage. Whether or not you want to get your own malpractice insurance may not be a bad idea, but at least make sure that who you're working for is getting you malpractice insurance. It's extremely important to have something there for that. A couple other things that I think is vitally important as well is that when you are looking at insurance, actually see what insurance it is. See if they've kept that for a long time, if they plan to change. If it's hospital insurance, I know this is going to annoy some people. Maybe some people will disagree with it. Most hospital-owned insurance is crap. And most people will tell you that who's worked there. Now, there's a few exceptions. If you work for this big monstrosity of a system and pretty much every doctor around is going to be working for that group, maybe it's not a big deal. But if you're working for the small rural hospital that doesn't have any specialists and has a high copay, if you go outside of that area, that may be a problem for you. So just keep that in the back of your mind, is not only does it have insurance and what they say they're going to pay for it, but what are the contingencies? What does that actually cost you? Does that actually make sense for you?
Absolutely. Those are great things. And also, I would also add to make sure what the limits are on your coverage. And also, whose name is on the policy? Is it actually your name or is it the group's? I think just good things to know when you head into your first or second or third job.
Great. Any other things, Fred, that you would like to add that we haven't covered so far? Because we could obviously talk to contracts forever. That's the issue.
I would just say, again, just going in, knowing what you're comparing jobs against each other, making sure it's comparable, apples to apples. You might need to do some math and do some breakdown like you mentioned earlier, Chip. And I think really, you know, I tell folks is that, are you going to make this a job or a career? I think both of us can probably agree that we've made this our career, which is fine. There are definitely folks who definitely want to go in and just kind of punch the clock and just make it a job and punch in, punch out, which is totally fine too. I know plenty of folks like that. But I do think that if you make it a career, I think you'll probably make your career longer. You'll have longevity and probably better wellness. And there's many ways of, you know, making it a career. I mean, you can find a niche on what you like to do. Obviously, Chip, we know what you love to do, which is great. And I think it keeps you happy. I have a passion for education. I also do some EMS work still in wilderness medicine. People can precept students or teach. They can get involved with hospital committees. There's obviously your professional organizations. So SEMPA or your state organization, you can get involved with them. You can take a leadership position. So there's definitely ways to grow and to make it a career. Probably make you happier and keep you in the game longer. Wanted to give one more plug for SEMPA. Again, disclosure, I'm not paid by anybody. But SEMPA just recently put out an emergency medicine toolkit for practicing PAs. And also there's one for students where we provide many, many, many resources on finding jobs, where to look, medical resources, education, practice issues. So I think if you're a member, you should definitely check that out. It's a lot of work went into it. And the folks that did that did a phenomenal job. It's probably like a 20-30 page booklet, actually. So if you get a chance, SEMPA's put that out as a resource for everyone. So,
but you'll have to be a member, right?
You'll have to be a member, which is well worth it. Check us out.
Maybe worth it just there alone. Well, Fred, thank you so much for coming on, talking to us. This has been great. Obviously, we could cover so much more, but we have only so much time. So, Fred, what I'd like to ask is that if anyone's listening to this, shoot us your questions. Let us know what you have questions about or suggestions maybe you have. Feel free. Obviously, we always have a comment section on the blog post, so you can put it there. You can message us directly. I prefer if you put this on your comments, especially for this type of situation, because I have a feeling there are going to be lots of people who come to this and want to know more information. Please plug your questions there. Fred and I will get back to you on anything like that. And I guess, Fred, without further ado, can you give us the tagline?
I absolutely can, but I will first say thanks for having me, Chip. It was a true pleasure. And with that, until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.